Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's get to our guest, the chief economist at the Heritage Foundation, Stephen Moore, joins us now. Stephen, Michael Bloomberg there. Wow. I couldn't believe that when I heard it.
Yeah, well, hi, Annie. Good to be with you. Let's start with just amazing news on the economy. I mean, this is incredible. I talked to the president last week, and I just said, you know, this is amazing what you've done. It's working out better than when Larry Kudlow and I started, you know, working with him 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. Usually when these, you know, recoveries get older, they kind of run out of steam. This economy isn't running out of steam. It's picking up steam. And by the way, do you remember it was people like Michael Bloomberg and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Nancy Pelosi who kept saying, oh, recession is right around the corner, right?
Yeah.
No recession. I mean, there is no recession anywhere to be seen. And one of the messages here, in my opinion, I mean, I said this on Fox News on Friday morning when the report came out on the jobs, 300,000 jobs. I said, Madam Speaker, stop what you're doing. You know, look at the country. I mean, we're doing better than we've done in 40 or 50 years with the economy, and you're going to impeach this guy? I mean, do you think that it's really lunatic, in my opinion, that they haven't called this thing off? And you know, we're going to spend another 2 months, you know, dealing with this. You know, it's like watching a movie that you already know the ending to. So yeah. What is the point of this?
We're speaking with Stephen Moore, the chief economist at the Heritage Foundation. You said you spoke with the president last week. You know, you talk about this, the economy picking up steam. We are growing while, from what I understand, the global economy is slowing. Imagine what the USMCA would do. Imagine what a deal with China would do. Meanwhile, we're talking about a communist China here that the president is trying to get a trade deal done with. If he were able,
by the way, that little clip that you played, that was Bloomberg that said that.
Yes, and with a PBS reporter saying that he basically is suggesting that President Xi there is only interested in what the constituency wants. I mean, good grief, he got rid of his ability to lose elections in the future.
Here's the point, you know, regardless of what you think about, regardless of what you think about climate change, I mean. The fact is that even if the United States didn't even exist, even if every American just up and died and we stopped, you know, our factories, we stopped our steel production, our auto and our technology, it wouldn't make any difference because China is emitting so much pollution into the air. And these, you know, liberals like to believe what they want to believe. Right. And so they actually believe that China cares about climate change.
Yeah.
I guarantee you they don't care about climate change. They care about one thing. Economic supremacy. And if they have to use coal or oil or gas or, you know, they'll use whatever energy source they can to power an economy with 1.3 billion people. And so, you know, this idea, we are not, in fact, you know this because I've mentioned this on your show a couple months ago. The United States, we've actually reduced our carbon emissions more than any of the European countries or any of the other countries in the world. And yet somehow we're the villain.
Yeah, we're always the villain, but it's always interesting who is perpetrating us as the villain. It's always the Democrats. You look at a guy who wants to run for office on the Democratic ticket who doesn't even understand how President Xi is oppressing the people in his country, or at least the government in China is oppressive. It's not a place that you go to enjoy freedom. And this guy wants to implement massive government control over so many other things that securities that he's trying to persuade voters. If you give me some of your freedom, I'll provide you some of those securities. That's going to be massively expensive. And the security is never as good as it could be unless you provide it for yourself.
Well, you know, this is really the sucker punch of every, you know, Marxist, Leninist, communist, socialist, whatever. They always say, yeah, we're going to take away your freedom, but you're going to have security. And, you know, there's an old saying, if you give up your freedom for security, you have neither freedom nor security, right?
And you're never getting the freedom back. Yeah.
You never, A, you never get the freedom back. And B, you know, they don't provide security. I mean, does anybody think that the, you know, Chinese army is a force for good? And so, you know, it comes back to this idea that Trump came into office with a very, you know, particular agenda: put America first, rebuild our economy, be pro-business, get government off the back of our businesses, get the taxes down so we can be competitive. And now the rest of the world is looking at us like, how the hell are they doing that? You know, I mean, you're right. You put it so well. None of the other countries are growing. Germany now looks like they're falling into recession. The rest of Europe is flat. You know, France has big problems. They have people, you know, protesting in the streets. You got Japan's not growing much. And then China, they're kind of in a free fall. And U.S. economy is just booming. And everybody's saying, I want what they're having. You know?
Exactly.
So we lead by example. That is the role of the United States. It's not to provide foreign aid. It's not to provide all this economic assistance. If we get it right, usually the rest of the world does. That's what happened under Reagan, and I think that's what will happen under Donald Trump. And incidentally, you may not have heard because this just broke, but it looks like they now have a deal with Nancy Pelosi. We only had to wait a year for this. It looks like we may now have that vote on the U.S.-Canada-Mexico trade agreement, which would be a gigantic, gigantic victory for the American economy, American workers, our farmers. So let's hope that that's so. That's the latest press report.
Yeah, I'm reading from Fox News right now. It says a final deal could come together in the next 24 hours, according to sources, paving the way for ratification by all three countries. U.S. stocks were a little changed on the developments.
Well, because they won't believe it till they see it. You know, and you know, Pelosi, why is it taking over a year for this to happen?
Politics.
You know, why has Nancy Pelosi been sitting on this? She doesn't want to hand Trump a political victory, even though it's good for American workers, our farmers, our ranchers, our union. You know, even the union now like this trade deal. It's a better deal for the unions than the old NAFTA. And and Pelosi's held it up.
Hey, Stephen, this is Ryan Wiggins. In light of USMCA and the jobs report and everything that's going positively for the United States, and it looks like maybe even for the rest of North America if this deal gets passed,
is it
even possible for the unemployment rate to go below 3.5%? Or is it just at 96.5% employment, are we maxed out?
You know, it's a great question, Ryan, because when I was in college, that was 30 years ago, the economists used to say, once you get to about 4% unemployment, you're at full,
right,
at full employment, because you always have people moving in and out of the workforce, and the person might lose their job, so they take some time to find a new job. So 4% was considered full employment, and now we're at 3.5%, which is a half a percentage point below what used to be considered full employment. By the way, there are some states that have unemployment rates as low as 2.5%.
Wow.
So the answer to your question is we do not have a shortage of jobs in the United States. We have a shortage of workers who are, and by the way, did you see the story this weekend? You know, the Wall Street Journal had a great report saying maybe now is a good time to say no food stamps for people who are, able-bodied, don't have kids in the home, working age, and maybe instead of being on food stamps, they should go out and find a job. And oh, my God, the left has gone crazy. Oh, these Republicans, they want to, starve to death people. No, we want to get people into the workforce. And the best thing you can do for somebody who's, down on the luck, get them a job.
So one last question, or kind of just open floor for you
now. Do you think I'm cold-hearted for saying that?
Oh, gosh, no. No, let me hear
it. It's so common sense. Why not? I mean, it'd be one thing if we had a 10% unemployment rate. You know, when Obama massively expanded the food stamp program, he said, we got to have this because there's no jobs. Well, now there are more jobs than there are people to fill them. So why are we still sending out, I think there's still something like 35 to 40 million people still on food stamps.
Yeah, it's shifting the precedent and establishing a new expectation for our ability of able-bodied people who don't have those people. There is a gap that exists for people who are using some sort of federal or state aid, especially I think about mothers. I'm 35. I have three kids myself, and I know people who have had to go on help because they're single parents, and if they go out and get a job, they qualify for less money, they net less money, and then they have to pay for child care and everything. That is a whole different circumstance than people who are capable of providing for themselves. And I think that as a country, when you're living off the tax dollars of well-intended, hardworking Americans, asking a little bit of those people who are doing some of the taking to do some of the making, I think that's a responsible thing to do.
I agree.
Let me ask you a question. Speaking of being cold-hearted or not, it's about Christmas shopping. Do you do the Christmas shopping at all in your house?
I do. I do some of it. And, I I actually am old-fashioned.
Yeah.
You know, I like to actually go to the store and actually pick out the stuff rather than clicking on the computer screen. But
I'm
a shopper.
So here's the question. This is a little bit of a discussion.
If you're going to ask me if I bought my wife a Peloton, the answer is
no, it's not.
I'm not going there.
That's probably not an economic or in this day and age a wise decision.
Did she buy you one, though?
Yeah, did she buy you one? That's a good question.
By the way, I did watch that.
Yeah.
My wife and I were watching TV last night, and we saw that ad, and I turned to the guy and said, do you think that's sexist? She's like, no, I don't even understand what they're talking about.
Exactly.
But funny. Everything offends people nowadays.
Yeah, I have no patience for it. So the question that we have here is, when you are doing a gift exchange, maybe among family members or coworkers, let's say that somebody sets a budget of $50 for a gift exchange. The question is, should you spend $50, no matter what it takes, like spend up to $50? Because this is an economics question. This is why we're asking you. Or should you acquire something that is worth $50, but if you spend less because you saved, that you can get away with spending $30 on a $50 item? Which do you think is the correct way to do it?
I think it's the thought that counts.
Are you a politician,
and, you know,
too?
Look, I mean, some of the best gifts that I've ever given, you know, didn't even cost a lot of money. But,
amen.
You know, I found something that, you know, they couldn't find. But, look, it's not about the money. It really is about, you know, really doing stuff that means something. You know, my best gifts I've got, my kids, they drew the picture. Or they, you know, they made something for me in their art class, and I still have those. I still have those things. You're a mother. You're 35 years old. I'm, you know, 20 years ahead of you. So,
yeah.
I mean, I still have that stuff that my third and fourth graders give me, and those are the things that really mean the most to me.
Priceless.
And
right?
That's what I do, Steve, and I draw people cards, and I tell them, here, this is for you. This, it's the thought that counts.
Steve, we're going to need your address. you're going to be getting a nice gift from the Andy Fry Show this year. Well, it's always great to talk to you. We appreciate your insight, and we look forward to talking to you again soon. Lots of news coming out, and we'll have you back on here soon to talk about it. Thanks so much, Steven. Merry
Take
Christmas.
Care.
Bye. Chief Economist at Heritage Foundation. He kind of copped out on that.
Gosh, he's funny.
Yes, he did.
He
that was a political answer.
Yeah, and I'm going to let him get
Thanks,
away with
Macron.
It.
Thanks, Macron.
Because I didn't prepare him for that. I like to throw those little curveballs every once in a while.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.